Welcome to this portion of Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Paul Kanger, and he's written a new book. I don't know where he gets the time to do all these things, but he writes these wonderful best-selling books. This new one is called A Pope and a President, and it deals with John Paul II and Ronald Reagan. Dr. Kanger, it's a pleasure to have you back on, and let me just say, Time Magazine beat you about 15 years to the punch, because they actually had a cover story about that, believe it or not.
Yes.
But you wrote a book about it. That's cool.
You're showing your age. It's 25 years to the date.
Oh!
That Time Magazine cover. Yeah, the Holy Alliance, it was called. It was 1992. And do you know who wrote that?
No,
It was Carl Bernstein.
Oh,
Carl
wow.
Carl Bernstein wrote that. Yeah, he called it the Holy Alliance, which really just shows, you know, kind of give a sense of our audience and the ecumenical nature of the story. You have Carl Bernstein, who is Jewish, I think non-religious. In
right.
fact, his parents were actually communists. He was raised in a red diaper household.
Wow.
And, you know, you have
Watergate
Roman
fame.
Catholic.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that?
Of Watergate fame.
Fame. And, you know, you of Coral Ridge Ministries and the late Dean James Kennedy and me, Roman Catholic, and Reagan, who was Protestant, raised in the Disciples of Christ, and ended up in the basically Presbyterian Church, USA churches, and then John Paul II, of course, the head of the Roman Catholic Church. So you see kind of, you know, the wide-ranging interest in this story, because it really was. I mean, the story of the 20th century was atheistic Soviet communism, which ran from 1917 to 1991. And these two men, Reagan and John Paul II, lived it. They saw it as the great evil of their time. And they came together of one mind and one mission to defeat it.
And somebody used the phrase, a singular bond that changed history. So tell me, why is it that you decided to write about it?
Well, I've been on this for a long time, and I don't know if you and I talked about it during this period. I don't think we did, but I started filing FOIA, Freedom of Information Act requests, back in 2000. And really, if you kind of look at the history of my books, the first big one I did was God and Ronald Reagan in 2004.
Yes.
And I had a chapter in there on Reagan and John Paul II. And what's happened all along the way, Jerry, and all these other books, is people kept coming to me with new information. Constantly, right? And I tried to kind of walk away from this project because I thought it was just so overwhelming. But just when I was about to, someone else would give me some more information. And I guess kind of the pivotal moment, there are really two. But one, it was July 2006. I have this written down in my notes. And I was at Bill Clark's house. Bill Clark was Reagan's closest advisor. I was working on his biography. And I talked to the man literally thousands of times. And this one day, Jerry, sitting in his living room, I'll never forget this, I said to him, Bill, I don't think I've ever asked you about what you and Reagan thought about the shooting of the Pope. And he said, oh. He said, well, Paul. And what he proceeded to tell me, I was so engrossed that I didn't even hit the record button on my recorder. And he said, we thought the Soviets did it. He said, we thought the Soviets did it from the very beginning. I said, you did? And he said, yeah. I said, you guys never talked about that in public. He said, no, we couldn't talk about it in public. He said, but myself, Reagan, Bill Casey, you know, we thought from the beginning that the Soviets were behind this. And so that was, 2006. Then there was another moment around 2009 that another source came to me and told me that the CIA under Casey did a super secret investigation, which the report has never been released. And I know it exists, and I've had even further confirmation, Jerry, since this book came out a month ago. But this guy told me, he said, the CIA did a super secret investigation of this, and it determined that the Soviets, specifically the Soviet GRU, military intelligence, ordered the assassination of John Paul II. And by 2011, I got further confirmation of that. And from then on, I've spent the last 5 or 6 years interviewing people and further confirming it still. So that's the kind of information that I've been slowly accumulating for at least 17 years and that convinced me that I had to write this book.
The shooter is still alive, right?
He is, and he was released from prison. Oh. In fact, think about this. The shooter of Reagan, John Hinckley, And the shooter of John Paul II, a Muslim Turk named Mehmet Ali Asha, have both recently been released from prison. And Reagan and John Paul II, I mean, you know, you like me, you lived through this, so we both remember that they were shot.
Yes.
Everybody kind of knows that they were both shot. What everyone forgets is they were shot only 6 weeks apart. I mean, Reagan was shot March 30th, 1981, and John Paul II immediately cabled his prayers to the White House. I am praying for you. I am praying for you. And then 6 weeks later, after Reagan is just about recovered, and by the way, getting ready to give a speech at Notre Dame, of all places, right? You know, the premier, the most popular Catholic college in America, John Paul II was shot on May 13th, and Reagan immediately sent his prayers off to the Vatican. So if these two guys had died in the matter of 6 weeks in the spring of 1981, which they should have, because they both almost bled to death. I mean, a few more minutes delay to the hospital, George Washington University Hospital for Reagan, Gemelli Hospital for John Paul II, and these guys would have bled to death, and the Cold War would not have ended as it did, or certainly when it did.
All right, we're talking right now with Dr. Paul Kanger, and Dr. Kanger, why don't you tell us in the big picture, how did Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II essentially help end the Cold War?
Well, they finally got together in June of 1982 at the Vatican. It's ironic that we're talking about this. We're talking almost 35 years to the exact day, which was June 7, 1982, that they met together for the first time. So, I mean, it's interesting. Trump and Francis just met together at the Vatican for the first time, and that actually went a lot better than people thought it would. But those two guys met together June 1982, and unlike Trump and Francis, Reagan and John Paul II, they went in as what Frank Shakespeare, the first ambassador to the Vatican, called kindred spirits, kindred souls. I mean, these guys agreed in their anti-communism, their views of free market economics, on the sanctity and dignity of unborn human life, their views on government, subsidiarity, all sorts of things. And above all, they go in with this mutual sense, and they said this to one another at the Vatican, 50 minutes alone in the Reagan Library. You know, Reagan told Bill Clark some of what he said. The Pope told Cardinal Laghi and some others some of what he said. And Reagan said to him, he said, "Look how the evil forces stood in our way and how Providence intervened to save our lives."
Wow.
And John Paul II agreed and said, yes. He said, "I believe too." They said to one another, they believed that God had intervened to spare their lives for the purpose, they believed, of taking down atheistic Soviet communism.
Now,
and Reagan, imagine this, Jerry. Yeah. This is an amazing thing to think. This is a Polish pope. So there had been nothing but Italian popes for 455 years.
Yeah.
That's like twice the life of the United States. There had never been a Slavic pope. And for the conclave, the College of Cardinals, to come together and pluck the first Slavic pope out of the heart of the Soviet communist bloc, the only country in Eastern Europe where the Soviet war and religion, you know, didn't work, Reagan saw that as divine planning. And Reagan said to the Pope in June 1982, the non-Polish president says to the Polish Pope, "Hope remains in Poland." He said, "We, working together, can keep it alive." And they agreed that Poland and the Solidarity Movement, if they could keep it alive and sustain it, after martial law and everything was declared in Poland, they believe that solidarity in Poland could be the dagger to the heart of the Soviet Empire.
So what did Reagan and Pope John Paul II actually do to help the people in Poland that were dissenting?
Well, they kept solidarity alive, for one thing. And, I mean, in a sense, they kept it alive logistically, sending the first printing presses into the entire communist world, the first Xerox machines, I should say, supplying it with aid, financial aid, whatever aid they possibly could, because it had been banned. It had been sent underground. I mean, Lech Walesa and all these other guys were arrested. And beyond that, and you can't put a number on this, it's hard to explain to people, but you ask anybody who was in the Soviet bloc, when Reagan would give those speeches, when Reagan, Christmas Day 1981, gives this nationally televised speech, Christmas Eve, actually it was December 23rd, 1981, And he says, "Would all Americans, would you please go to your windows tonight and light a candle and put it in your window for the solidarity movement in Poland?" I mean, you know, that thing, that kind of thing gets to the Polish people, and they're just overwhelmed by that. They're depressed that, the communists are trying to ban them, and then they find out the president of the United States did that. People of Poland told me they wept. They couldn't believe the president of the United States. They said, you know, can't imagine how that inspired us.
Wow.
And then when they would have the Polish Pope come to their country, and 5 million people would show up for an outdoor mass to get up in line for communion from the Pope, and the communists are just, you know, sweating in their boots. I mean, that kind of thing kept the solidarity movement alive. And Mikhail Gorbachev later said, when Poland held free and fair elections in June of 1989, 44 years after Stalin promised free and fair elections in Poland, Gorbachev said it was that, not the Berlin Wall, it was that that he knew signaled the end of communism.
Wow. And the Pope and Reagan together had a lot to do with it. Were there fax machines that they brought in? Were there secret devices, you know, radios that could, you know, get other stations and so forth? You know what I'm saying? Shortwave radios and so forth. Did they provide secret stuff for the Polish people?
All sorts of things, and they started, I mean, this is something people do not know about. I'm amazed how many Christians don't know about this. I have a chapter on this in the book. I interviewed Reagan's pastor, the Reverend John Boyles. He was the assistant pastor at the National Presbyterian Church under Louis Evans. And John Boyles, God bless him, what a great man. He's still alive. And they Reagan, Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, they started broadcasting Christmas Eve services into the Iron Curtain on Radio Free Europe. I mean, they started a whole bunch of religious programming that they were broadcasting in there. And the Soviets were just enraged at this. Like, you know, they couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
But they were doing it. They were smuggling in Bibles. And I have even noted here, probably the biggest thing of all, and this convinced the Soviets that they needed to put a bullet in the Pope, when the new Pope chose for his first visit to go, his first foreign visit to go to Poland in June 1979, and Leonid Brezhnev got on the phone to Edward Gierek, the communist puppet in Poland, and said, "You tell the Pope no, he's not allowed to come into Poland." And Gierek said, "How could I do that?" And the Pope said, "I'm going in whether you like it or not." I mean, there's a message here about courage.
Yeah.
Right? Reagan calling him an evil empire.
Yeah.
You know, John Paul II, same thing. So he went in there for 9 days in Poland, and I talked to Richard V. Allen, who was Reagan's first national security advisor. Allen said, "I'm telling you, I was sitting in Reagan's living room with him, just the two of us. We spent the day talking about foreign policy. This is 2 years before he came into the presidency, 3 or 4 years after he was governor. We sat down, we turned on the TV to catch the evening news. We're watching footage of the Pope's visit to Poland. 500,000 people show up in Victory Square for his first homily. And I looked, and there are tears filling up Reagan's eyes." Mm. And he said, "Dick, that's it." He said, "The Pope is the key. The Pope is the key. The Pope is the key. We've got to get elected. We got to reach out to him, to the Vatican, and make them an ally."
Wow.
So Reagan realized this was the key to taking down the Soviet bloc. And if you want to know one thing where Reagan and the Kremlin agreed, it was that this Pope was a mortal threat to the Soviet Empire, which is why Reagan said, "We got to reach out to them and make them an ally. Reach out to him and make him an ally." That's why the Soviets said, "We got to reach out to him with a pistol and put a bullet in his chest. The man has got to go."
Wow, what an amazing story! Like you say, of providence, and of the book. We're basically out of time, but would you say more is devoted to Carl Wattia, who is John Paul II, or more would be devoted to President Ronald Reagan? Or about a half, 50-50. Half and half. Okay.
Yeah, 50-50. I mean, yeah, I run through their parallel lives, going back to the 1910s and 1920s, all the way to their deaths, which were less than a year apart.
Well, this sounds like a must-read.
2005.
Absolutely.
No, thank you.
A Pope and a President by, again, Dr. Paul Kanger. Thanks so much for being with us. VisionandValues.org for more information. Paul, always a pleasure. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.